Welcome to another episode of Hot Hot Hoops, our Triple H podcast. Guys, it's been a long time since I've done this with you. How's it going, David and Ernest Christian?
Doing very well.
Doing very well as well, too.
This is, of course, episode 15 for those people that like to archive in their iTunes. So, obviously, the Heat won last night. Things are exciting, and Wade's still awesome.
Absolutely, man. What a performance last night.
Yeah, he was incredible. I mean, a lot of people are saying it was reminiscent of how he played years ago, but might have been even a little better than that. You know, overall impact on defense and on offense. And I think it shows how much of a will to win he still has, especially against former teammate, still friend LeBron James.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot of people coming out now, you know, it's the same thing. Oh, he's almost as good as he used to be. And a lot of people are also saying that Wade, this is the time that he comes out, you know, like he's kind of been hibernating. It's coming into spring, coming into playoff times. Now this is where he's potentially going to shine. And obviously he's been doing well this season because he hasn't, you know, touch wood, the knees don't appear to be bothering him. It's been his hamstrings. So who knows? How are you guys feeling thus far?
I
think he's playing very well. I think he realizes with Chris Bosh being out for the rest of the year, he has to carry the load the rest of the way if this team is going to even make the playoffs this season. And I mean, right now we're in a 3-way tie for 7 in the East. I think he realizes that he's the guy, the go-to guy, and that he's carried a load. I mean, it's been very impressive to see him play the last month. Really, be honest with you, I mean, he's been playing at a level we haven't seen. Really, be honest with you, since 2009. Obviously, talking about pre-LeBron, pre-Bosh. You know, so it's been very great to see. So he can still, you know, give these performances, and not only that, he always does this when the stage is brighter, when the need for victory is needed. You know, Wade always shows up whenever you need him. I mean, that's been like the narrative of his career pretty much for the last 12 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident that he'll stay healthy for the rest of the year. I know that's a big focal point moving forward as to whether or not they make the playoffs or not is a whole other issue. But I think he'll stay healthy. And moreover, though, I think he's really pissed off and wanting to show LeBron something, to be honest with you.
No.
I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but
they've been
friends for like
a
decade. You know, like,
yeah, but
he doesn't need to prove anything to LeBron. LeBron knows how good Wade is.
Well, right, okay. But he was still pissed off, though. I mean,
well,
not only that, but
if you look at the way LeBron games historically, even before they play together, Wade always plays up against LeBron James, even before the Big Three even formed.
Of course.
So it's something new.
Yeah. I can understand that. Let's review last night. Wade 32, 13 for 18. Brought the energy. The other guys fed off that. Dragic obviously did well. Mm-hmm. Who else did well? I can't think right now. Mario
it's
stepped up. Again, Mario is someone who steps up when... You know,
well, Haley, before you go there, because you haven't done the show before since the trade happened. What's your opinion on Dragic?
Oh, you know, he's fun. he's obviously improved our pace. No, it's exciting. Like, yeah, I'm loving him. To be honest, yeah. I probably haven't been watching as much as you guys have been watching because I've been having to go to bed super, super early for my new job. But
yeah,
it's exciting and obviously bummed that Bosch. Haven't seen it with Bosch, but hopefully he sticks around for next year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it kind of sort of seems like a foregone conclusion that he'll be here next year. Obviously, we have to go through the process of free agency, but it feels like that he'll be here for long term. And obviously, the long term, you know, process with his team is certainly brighter now with Dragic in the lineup. So, and you see that last night, for example, how important he is to this team, and the difference to having an actual point guard running the show. Look, he's facilitating process, you know, all that. He's getting guys involved and, you know, Wade's responding well to that. I mean, you've seen what a true point guard does for this team.
You know, I had thought the same thing, Haley, about Dragic regarding pace, but I actually looked at the numbers and the Heat are still at the bottom of the league as far as overall field goal attempts per game. They're still at the bottom, 76 field goal attempts per game. And then I looked at last night's numbers and, you know, they scored 106 points. They absolutely blew out Cleveland. And they only attempted 76 shots in the game. So they're right around their average. They've got a pace. They're keeping it there. But the difference, I think, was that 55% field goal rate. you know, they were much more efficient shots. And a lot of that has to do with Whiteside getting looks at the rim and Dwayne Wade playing, you know, his old efficient self. But I think Dragic is a part of that as well. Not only is he a great finisher at the rim, but like Ernest says, he's getting guys open looks. And they're meshing very well, and they're including Luol Deng, who's been really, really good over the past few weeks.
I saw a number, though, maybe a week ago, that the Heat are averaging, though, almost 10 points more a game with him in the lineup now as opposed to before the trade.
Right.
So
yeah, they're 11th in total scoring, but they're still a dead last as far as pace. So again, it's not necessarily about pace or shots per game, but they're getting better shots and they're making them at a much more efficient pace rate. Rather.
Now, a fun regular season game against the Cavs, obviously a bit of deja vu after what we did to them in Christmas, which was wonderful. You know, LeBron still hasn't had a win back here, which is just, you know, we'll try and say that for as long as we possibly can. But moving forward, can the Heat really compete on this level, or was this, I mean, we know they can if they pull it together and the cohesion's there and, you know, but moving forward, what are you guys thinking? Or are you looking over, we'll touch on Charlotte and Boston soon, but are you looking over your shoulder at those teams?
I'm assuming you're talking about the playoff, like in the playoffs.
Yeah.
My answer is no, because I just think, you know, not having Chris Bosh, that's a huge hole to fill. I mean, you're talking about a guy that averages 21 points a game, nearly 10 boards a game. You know, he does so many things schematically for this team, you know, stretching the floor out and whatnot. It's, you know, and you look, I mean, we saw this for the last 4 years. When the playoffs start, LeBron and company rises their, you know, their performance level. You
but
know what
LeBron
I mean?
So, does have different company this time.
well, right, true, but you know, you gotta expect LeBron James to rise. You know, assume we play Cleveland in the first round. You know, the Cavaliers are gonna rise their performance up a notch. Atlanta, I think Atlanta person is the worst matchup of all, because I think Atlanta, if Miami plays Atlanta right now, I think Miami maybe wins one game in that series. Atlanta's on another level schematically. I mean, that Miami is not ready to match that just yet. So, and without Chris Bosh, you're asking for a lot there, Ben. But, you know, like I said, give him a chance. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd play him tight. If they met Cleveland in the first round, it would certainly be a better matchup in Atlanta. I agree with you there. I said it last week. And
why are you saying that, though? Because we could take advantage of
The energy, the emotion, the familiarity there. I think it would just be a different scenario. I think we have better, you know, person-to-person matchups, you know, with the point guard position strengthened because of Dragic. I don't think Kyrie Irving is as much of the disadvantage as it might have been in the past. Whiteside over Mozgov, I'd take him any day. I think Wade certainly is a better shooting guard than either Iman Shumpert or J.R. Smith. And so that just leaves Luol Deng going up against LeBron James, and you know, statistically and historically, he's matched up pretty well with him. So the difference, though, however, is the power forward spot. So that's where it really matches up. Can you know, Udonis Haslam muster some of that 2006 NBA Finals type defense where he harassed the hell out of Dirk Nowitzki and make Kevin Love uncomfortable enough so that he's even further removed from the offense? That's the big question mark for me. So I think a matchup between the Cavaliers and the Heat would probably go about 6 or 7 games.
Okay, side note on that Haslam stuff. Moving forward, what realistically, how can we go if we even make the playoffs without the way Birdman and Haslam have been playing as of late? The energy's low. How are you feeling about that with no other big guys to help out?
I think Anderson's fine as far as, you know, as a backup, he's done okay now that he's not required to play as many minutes, and you know, he's provided some good shot protection. I'm not too concerned about that. Yeah, the lack of a power forward.
Up.
No, I don't think so. He's dealing with whatever injuries he's going to at this point in his career. They're not going away anytime soon for either him or Haslam. I mean, Haslam's like a walking medical unit there. I mean, he's got constant aches, you know, everything from his hair is probably the only thing that doesn't hurt on him. And I just think that he'll find some kind of way to will himself through it. He's not going to be effective all the time, but he's still going to give it his all the time. So, I mean, you know, it's not a bad thing having Michael Beasley off the bench to provide a kind of different flavor. Obviously,
look
his
at
defense
where we are. Can you just repeat the sentence you just said? this is where we are, people.
We talked about it, though. I mean, and you know, maybe you haven't seen it, but if you haven't, you're doing yourself a disservice, because his defense has improved and his offense is not bad. You know, he's always going to be shooting at that efficient rate that he did last season as well. And he's taking less shots. He's not trying to force anything. He's trying to play within the flow of the game. And you know, the team seems to be comfortable with him. You know, we saw some reports earlier today that they look like they're going to sign him for the rest of the season. I think it's a great move.
Yep, I think so. And like, and if David is saying that, if David's
Or
giving him the the positive swing, that's saying a lot because believe me,
does
I.
signing him mean that Beasley shifts into comfortable mode?
Oh no, I don't
That's a
think
good
so.
point. That's a good point. But no, I don't think so. I think you've seen, like I said, you and I did an article about this a couple weeks ago, Dave. And one of the things we're concerned about is the maturity level. Is he has he learned, from through all the stints he's had in the NBA and not being able to really stick with one team when I and be and rise to the potential. I think we're starting to see that now. Because if it doesn't, like I said, if it doesn't work in Miami, it won't work anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? So, and you're seeing defensively he's playing well. He's playing smarter on offense. Like not just jacking up shots.
Right.
I think he's fit very well. And one of the, we said this on the podcast last week. And one of the things that I think fans need to pay attention to really for the long term is that while this might be a lost season going forward, what you're seeing here with Spoelstra and company is that they are trying to build a second unit here for the future. Which guys here are going to be here for the long term? Guys who you can depend on after the starting five. Like obviously you assume Dragic and Wade, Dang, Whiteside will be back next year, and Bosch is healthy next year. That's your starting five. That's one of the best starting fives in the league. But who's your bench? Who's the guys that who's going to provide the depth that people say that we may or may not have? And this is the opportunity here where we see Tyler Johnson, Beasley, Walker, Henry Walker. I'm gonna call him Bill Walker again. But this is the opportunity for these guys to develop into being guys we can go to in the future to have depth going forward.
I love it, and I won't, and I can't overstate. I think Henry Walker, strangely enough, is having a positive influence on him. The fact that
Yes,
they
he
were
is.
college teammates, but I think Henry Walker is sharing that kind of desperation. He's mentioned in a number of interviews that he's playing for his kids, and then you see Beasley echoing those same statements. Maybe they're following kind of similar life paths, and it's just kind of intersecting with their career path. So it's a very interesting dynamic there, kind of keeping each other in check. They're playing, more or less the same, position, kind of a front court reserve where they have to provide some scoring off the bench. I think Beasley's defense is actually a little better, if you can believe it. So it's
Wow,
just a
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just great. It's great to see. I think a lot of fans are always have always been in Beasley's corner, and a point I think I've brought up on a number of occasions that he's never done anything illegal while he's in Miami, so there's not that much of a reason to hate him. He might be a knucklehead,
I'm sure he's
but
done plenty of illegal things in
well, he's never
Miami.
been caught.
It's just
He's never
amazing,
been
though.
caught.
Right, it's amazing. He has a really big cult following out here, though. I mean, like you have all the Heat players of yesteryear. Guys that we attach ourselves to. I gotta be honest with you, Michael Beasley has a very strong cult following here with Heat fans here. He really does.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
His partner in crime, Walker, held his own against James last night. How did you, apart from that, obviously, that moment against Mozgov, how did you guys feel about him in a big game like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Was he that much of a factor? I didn't really notice it by that point. I guess maybe I thought by the time he was playing, it was a foregone conclusion because I thought the energy levels from the Cavaliers were pretty depleted. I mean, you saw LeBron kind of pad his stats in the fourth quarter. I don't think he had one of his worst games in recent history. So I didn't really notice anything spectacular out of Walker. Ernest, did you see anything?
No, same old, same old. He's playing hard. He's playing really hard, man. I mean, that's one of the things. That's all you can ask for against teams like Cleveland. Just play your best, do what you can do, and go from there. I mean, but he's, like I said, he's been a positive thing for Beasley. I think he's done a very good job in his 20-plus days of being in Miami. And like I said, if it won't work in Miami, believe me, it won't work anywhere else because Miami is the front runner of teams in the NBA that. A stability and whatnot. If it won't work here, then good luck.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I just remembered. I'm just looking at the calendar, looking at the
Right.
season moving forward. It's actually Pat Riley's 70th birthday on Friday.
That's right.
There you go.
That's exciting.
70, isn't
70
that
years
amazing?
young. 70 years young, by the way. It's a record. But did you guys read the interview with Ethan Skolnick last week?
I read the comments that flash up on my Twitter. That's about it. I just
What'd
haven't.
you think?
Last week as a mayor, I haven't read anything. Talk,
Well,
David. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was spectacular. I mean, I think we've seen that thing, that attitude from him in years past. He's always thinking about the now. He hates losing. This is a guy who coined the phrase "losing is misery." I think we've known all along that he's always looking to build a contender now. And I was just I think we were kind of shocked at seeing that he was willing to make the trade for Dragic, knowing that Chris Bosh was probably going to be out for the rest of the year. So that was the most interesting thing that I got from him. Other than that, I think it's just mostly, again, the same kind of attitude that we expect from
Sorry,
Riley. That
is that what he said in the interview that he
he
kind of
did. He
okay.
did.
Well, I
That he
guess he
got
had to, didn't he?
Yeah, he
he
did. He
had
did.
he had a call from Harlan Selznick, I think, which is the team doctor, and he had just given the diagnosis regarding Bosch. And the next phone call he made was to Phoenix's front office telling him to make the trade. So, it was an interesting side note there. But
That gets lost because of all the LeBron stuff. Like, if you didn't read the interview and you follow the mainstream media's, you know, like, snippets and stuff, they're going to talk about LeBron and the whole thing about how he feels about LeBron leaving. To me, I gotta be honest with you, that stuff is boring because it's the same things he said that he said back in August, September with Dan Le Batard. To me, sure. So everything he said was just a precursor of what he said before. Look, the stuff with Bosch was a lot more interesting. You know, his career path, and whatnot, and if you right. don't know his story, obviously, you know, he's a very interesting journey to the NBA and whatnot. But yeah, the Dragic stuff with Bosch was, to me, was the most interesting piece of information we got there, and how he feels about the future moving forward.
Yesterday, I believe, marked the day where we are now 1 month away from the season ending. So how about we look through this next month of the Heat's last games and who their matchups are. What are you guys thinking that moving forward? Obviously, it's going to be – we can talk about so many things here. We talk about Boston. We can talk about Indiana. They're doing well. But the games we've got ahead, how are you thinking? I'm feeling doesn't look as daunting as it could be in the position that we're in.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I'm a little surprised that you'd say that because I looked at it last week and I actually don't think that they'll make the playoffs just because I think they'll be challenging. You know, we've seen some greatness from them last night, and I think that's part of the theme for the season is we've been up and down. We were buoyed by these incredible victories, and then they fall flat the next time around. I mean, we saw it last week, and then they went up and faced Toronto and got blown out there. You never know what to expect from this team, and it's disappointing.
Okay, maybe I've only just noticed San Antonio Spurs and OKC in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a long road stretch there where we face OKC, Milwaukee, who's still competitive, even though they've dropped some games. Boston, winners of five straight. Atlanta, forget about it. We're not going to win there. You know, you go up against San Antonio, again at Cleveland, at Indiana, Charlotte, Chicago, all these teams that are in the thick of the playoff race. That seems to be what – I mean, I think we're facing a number of teams that are at least over 500 or in the playoff race. So it's a pretty dangerous thing. I mean, I don't want to go up against a team like the OKC Thunder, who's struggling just to make the eighth seed in the Western Conference, but is clearly a very dominant team. They'll probably have Kevin Durant by that point. So this is a pretty strong unit that we're going to have to face here. Nothing's a guaranteed victory for Miami. And although, you know, we saw last night that they can play at an elite level, will they for the next 19 games of the season? I don't see it.
On a positive, like our last two games are the Magic and the Sixers. So that is, you know, those are going to have to be must and expected wins.
The only thing about that, though, is that my theory in sports is that the only teams that are scarier than playing for teams that are playoff teams are teams that are playing for jobs. Those guys on Philly and Orlando are playing for jobs next year. So they're going to play hard those last couple games before the year's over. We may not notice it because we're not probably going to watch any of those games. I mean, it's Miami's involved, obviously. But those, you know, they have players in those rosters that want to play for jobs next year. So nothing's a given anymore. The fact that Miami hasn't been able to piece together a nice winning streak this year outside the beginning of the year, the first couple weeks, whatever you want to call it, is troublesome because that's, as Dave said, that is the theme. You know, we win one big game and everything's like, oh, this is great. We'll maybe put it together. But then we lose a game against Boston or like last week, or a game against Indiana we needed like a month ago. So that's the problem. All these games, and I said this too back 3 months ago, all these games against Indiana back in November, those losses against Philadelphia, they're not haunting us now because if those games were wins, right now we're 2-3 up right now in – Probably vying for the sixth seed because Milwaukee was slipping now. So these games have not haunted us now.
David.
We haven't had a three-game win streak since that first three-game start to the season.
That's correct.
That's sad. I mean, that was the longest streak of the season as far as our longest
winning
streak.
What a time it was, though.
It was.
We were so happy.
It was glorious.
And David, it's going to require someone. It's for us to make the playoffs, honestly, with the way Boston's playing right now. And I know Indiana's lost a couple games in a row, but I think Indiana's a lock, in my opinion. I think Indiana is the tried and tested team. They're well coached, you know, veteran leadership, all that. It's going to require Miami to actually put up the other winning streak these next couple weeks for asking them a good shot.
That they share in common, though, sorry, Haley, is defense. They both played a great defense, in Indiana and Boston, and so that's why they're positioning themselves where they are right now.
Yeah.
Of, you just touched on there, but of the Pacers, the Celtics, and Charlotte, who are you finding the most dangerous at the moment?
Indiana.
Moving forward.
Indiana by far. Indiana by far. And in fact, In fact, if I'm Cleveland or Atlanta, I don't want to play that team. Because not saying they're going to beat them, but they're going to take that series longer than it should be. They're going to grind you out, make you work for every possession, and then you may have some wear going to the second round of the playoffs if you're the Cavaliers or the Hawks. So the Pacers, with all the experience and stuff, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to play Indiana. Absolutely. Indiana is the most dangerous of the teams involved.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Charlotte. I think Indiana is a pretty strong team. But I'm actually concerned about Boston, because it's almost like, since they have nothing to play for and they're just so happy to be winning at this point, and they're legitimately a playoff contender, I think they're kind of playing, you know, free, carefree and loose, and I think that's going to translate into some more wins, and especially when they're as well coached as they are. You know, Brad Stevens has a goal, a system. They don't even have Isaiah Thomas, their big trade with Phoenix, in the lineup, and they're still continuing to win games, and it's just because of that defense. This past 5-game winning streak, they're holding opponents to under 90 points, with the exception of a 92 outing against Memphis. I mean, so they're really shutting teams down, and that's going to be a huge difference maker there.
Isaac Koppel, he touched on, it was almost like a clickbait kind of story, because, you know, everyone's going to go into a bit of outrage, but he touched on the subject, do the Heat shut it down? Do they shut it down now and just preserve who we've got and, you know, look into next year? What's your guys' take on that one?
I got to be honest with you, though, with that article, like, it didn't shock me, because it ran through my mind actually the day before that. And then I saw it, and I actually considered writing something like that before, and I was like, let me not do that yet. And then, like, the next day I wake up and I see on my RSS feeder that was the article. But it's run through my mind, you know, should Miami, you know, they've gone through 4 deep runs in the playoffs the last 4 years, obviously. Should they just pack it up and, you know, reset, let Wade rest, you know, all these guys rest up and get ready for next year with Bosch and lineup? You know, obviously, it is the anti-Riley, anti-Heat culture thing to do. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say we should do that. I think we should always take as far as we can. You know, we didn't bring Dragic here for nothing, obviously. But, you know, it has crossed my mind, definitely. And certainly what Isaac wrote in our article, which actually was a very well-written article, too, by the way. You know, it's definitely something that has crossed all our minds. But at the end of the day, you want your team to try as best as it can. You never know, man. You never know. And Miami's roster is still pretty decent, man. They have guys who've been there and played in big games. So not like they're going to just fall apart and be intimidated by the moment. So you still got – I'm still the old school, man. You still got to try hard as you can to take as far as you can.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody on the team right now wants to continue playing for something. That's the whole thing, though. It's like the goal is to make the postseason. Once they make it, they'll probably feel so exhausted emotionally and physically, you know, because it's just been such a long and trying season that they may not have anything left for the actual playoff games that they'll be forced to play. But, you know, I don't think they're going to shut it down. Again, good article and everything else, but at the same time, it's just a fun conversation to have. Miami isn't like other teams. They don't shut it down. That's never been part of their makeup, at least not in the 19 years that Pat Riley's been in Miami. So it's not going to happen. But, you know, I'm hoping that they'll be able to turn it around and show some consistency over these last 16 games. I misspoke earlier when I said 19, but over the last 16 games, you know, hopefully they'll be a little bit more consistent and maybe they'll make a run there. You know, Milwaukee is slipping. Indiana doesn't look as powerful as they might. You know, we could potentially get as high as the 6th seed, although I sincerely doubt it. But it's always
what you want is a 7th. Like, you want to be against the Cavs.
Oh, absolutely. Me personally, yeah.
Okay,
I think if
we're going to bow out, I'd rather, you know, have that series to watch.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Of course. But I also – is that – to me, everybody says, oh, because of the storyline. No, I think they're a better matchup for Miami. I think if Atlanta plays Miami, they're going to wipe the floor with the Heat.
Yeah.
Atlanta's that good.
I think we'll be able to defend them from deep, and it'll just be – uneventful. And, you know, I'd much rather, you know, I want to watch superstars. I want to watch Kyrie. I want to watch LeBron. I want to watch that team against us.
Yeah. what going up against Toronto is not nearly as sexy a matchup, I guess.
No.
I mean they're currently the third seed, right?
I mean, German Rondo scares me. Dennis Schroeder, of course.
off the back of that, there's been a lot of talk lately of Spoelstra's performance of late. Do you think he's lost the plot? Is he losing his mind, or is he just cool, calm, collected? He knows what's going on.
Wow, that's a tough question to answer. I mean, I think he's just adjusting on a daily basis to whatever's happening. I mean, I think he's a lot more even keeled and less stressed out than we would have ever imagined based on how he was over the last 4 years. I think everybody was a little uptight knowing that, you know, with the amount of talent they had on those teams, that his job was not necessarily in jeopardy, but I mean, he was under a lot more scrutiny than he is this year. So he seems a little bit more relaxed and kind of resigned into thinking, well, you know, this is what I've got to do. And it's really, I think, given him more freedom than we ever would have expected.
I'll be honest with you, like a lot of these people on Twitter, you hear people on
Where are those people on Twitter?
Heat Twitter. Look, Heat Twitter, I love and hate Heat Twitter. Like, it's fun sometimes, but then it's, like, annoying.
Sometimes you realize how stupid Heat Twitter is.
All these people who sit there and talk about Spoelstra this and that, can't do this. Don't you know a lick about basketball? Well, you know, what goes to the coaching? It's not just what you see on TV. It's also in practice, in the film room, and all this stuff, and monitoring egos. And people don't account for that stuff, man. They just see what they see on Sun Sports. You know, it's like, come on, man. Just stop already with all the criticizing. You know, I think he's done a great job, man. I think he's, you know, under the circumstances, there's been like what, four forms of this team this year, and we're not even another quarter or the quarter way to go to the year. I mean, you gotta give him a lot of credit, man. He's been able to adjust and keep this team in the hunt. You know, Wade's missed 16 games and Bosch out for the year, McRoberts was playing well, then he's out for the year.
Yeah.
I mean, try that. I mean, well, he was dealt a bad hand this year.
Really. I don't remember if I brought it up last week or not, but the Heat had fielded 27 different starting lineups. I mean, that's the third,
correct.
Third most in the NBA behind, you know, New York Knicks and Philadelphia, two teams that are nowhere near the playoff hunt. So imagine anybody trying to deal with that kind of inconsistency. You don't even know who's going to be out there on a night-to-night basis. You're adjusting constantly. And he's shown that he's able to at least keep the team in the playoff race. I mean, that's, you've got to give him some credit. And, yeah, obviously the players on the floor are making the difference. You know, you could question some of his in-game adjustments, but still – they haven't lost focus. They haven't lost sight of the overall goal, and you have to give Spoelstra credit for that.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's being lost in the shuffles that their biggest injuries they've had have been with their best players. It's not been like, oh well, you know, Bill Walker gets hurt or whatever. It's been Wade. It's been Bosch, McRoberts, the core group of guys that have been getting hurt, not the second tier guys. So. Give him credit for that, man.
I'd like to bring up a point. You know, I know we talked about it a lot last week because it was just after Whiteside's ejection and, you know, following one game suspension against Boston. But there was that one play against Cleveland last night where he got tossed down to the ground by Timofey Mozgov. Did you guys feel that same kind of tension there where you were
waiting
wondering
for
whether
to crack
or not?
It.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. I felt a little bit. It's like, come on, Whiteside, don't get sucked into it now. You know, right. He's gotta learn to know when to.
You know, and it's funny, like, people are so mad about Whiteside, what he did. I think Riley likes that, to be honest with you. I just think that he wants it to be harnessed a little bit, though. But Riley loves nasty players.
Sure.
It's been, well, I had Lane Green at BasketballInsiders.com on my radio show last week. He spoke to Darrell Wright about 2 weeks ago, because I asked him this question about Whiteside, whether, you know, is Riley, you know, what's his opinion on, you know, what kind of players that he likes. And he said that Darrell Wright told him that Riley loves nasty players, guys who plays, you know, tough and physical. It's a matter of us getting it all harnessed. That's all it is with Whiteside. I think he has to do a better job of controlling his emotions. And he did well yesterday, and we'll see if moving forward he can continue doing that. We're going to need him for the down the stretch now.
Well, he doesn't even know what emotions are because he hasn't started with the playoffs.
That's very true.
But,
that's such a great point, Haley.
Oh, yes. Thanks so much, guys. It was just a quick podcast today. David Ramil and Ernest Christian. Check us out, hothoops.com, for all of your latest Miami Heat news and lots of fun stuff, too.